Well, it's great to be with all of you guys. As we kick it off, just you're in the right room if you're here to talk through pastoring through suffering and conflict. Just theory, you know, just something that may occur at some point in life. Now, this room is probably, you're probably here if you've been in ministry for some time and you've experienced it. And so you come, and anytime you can process through how to enter in and survive in the challenges of life and ministry, coming to the conversations like this, I know for me personally, is really life-giving. I want to share a little bit about me because I don't know most of you here, and you probably have no idea who I am. My name is Jay O'Brien, and I pastor Scarlet City Church. We are in Columbus, O-H. Hey, yes, there we go. Sorry if I offended most of you. Yeah, we are. What'd you say? Okay. Yeah, I don't know who he is. Sounds like a good guy. We just celebrated 5 years, and it all went according to our plan. Before we planned it, I went through a residency, seminary training, went around the country, raised money. We had this really neat business plan that we shared with people. And then it's just all happened right along how we drew up on the whiteboard, and here we are 5 years later. Obviously, you know, that's a complete joke. One of the things that I realized in planting or in entering into ministry was I was really prepared on an intellectual level. Theologically, I was very well prepared. And even leadership-wise, I had good experience. I had been a part of a church plant when I was in college. I'd been in ministry. So leadership, I had some good experience. But in leadership that I didn't have, experience I didn't have, where I was sorely lacking, was actually some of the fundamental needs of pastoring. And that's how to enter in and help people in moments of suffering, and then how to lead in conflict. And so 9 months into to moving to Columbus, the church had not yet started. We moved with a team. One of my best friends, we are next of kin with their children. My wife and his wife were best friends. We moved together to plant the church. And 9 months in, we were at an event in downtown Columbus, serving with crew, providing meals for them as we're doing some inner city ministry. And a friend comes running to us. His name's Brad Snyder. He's a pastor at Veritas Community Church in Columbus. And he comes running in with shock in his eye. And he couldn't even get the words out. And he comes and he looks at Gabe and he says, "Your almost 3-year-old son, Deacon, is hit by a car. They're taking him right now to Nationwide Children's Hospital." And Gabe just falls to the ground. You never imagine hearing that. Nothing of that sort was on his mind that day. It was a beautiful day. We're doing good work, and you get the news, and he rushes to the hospital. My wife and I, a few minutes later, are on our way. We get a text while we're driving there. The deacon didn't make it. And my first funeral that I had ever done was the death of my best friend's son. And we didn't have any... We were just trying to survive. We didn't know what to do. 4 months later, my mom passes away. My wife and I are in Florida, unexpectedly there at her bedside, weeping and crying, still trying to recover from the loss of my friend's son, and now grieving the loss of my mom. A month later, our church starts. And we had no, we were just trying to survive. It's a miracle that we're even still around. And so we experienced some just traumatic pain. Fast forward a few years, and Gabe and I were leading the church together, but there was some unhealthy dynamics in our team and in his and I relationship, and also in his relationship with one of our other team members. And that led to some conflict that was ongoing that we needed to address, and that resulted in us needing to part ways, and it was messy. And there was a time when Gabe and his wife Monica, who again we were had been best friends with, we were sitting at a table, and Monica is reading from her diary, surprised, was unaware of the conflict, and was reading about the pain that I was causing her. And Megan and I met, we prayed about it, we said, you know, this could destroy the church. We are hurting our friends. We need to go. And so that led me to submitting a resignation with our elders and people we had brought around with us to go through this process. And they said, Jay, listen, you can't run. We need to address this. And so none of that was in my plan. None of that was a part of what we envisioned when we were entering into ministry. It wasn't what I signed up for. When I signed up for ministry, I thought I was signing up for a really exciting adventure with Jesus. And I saw suffering and pain and conflict as a roadblock to that great vision and to that great story. But what God has done and what God has shown me through this is that that's not some roadblock. That is the vision. We live in a painful, hurting, broken world. Look at the election. Pain and suffering is all around us. We're not ministering to plastic people who have it all together, and we're going to enter into and just give them some nice uplifting sayings to get them along life. We're ministering to people who have very real pains and questions and doubts. Suffering is a part of the equation. And so what I want to share in our time together is a passage. If you have a Bible, open up to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And we're not going to, I'm not preaching a sermon. I want this to be really practical, but I want to point you to a passage that has been really powerful for me in this season. And then just share some ways that God worked in my life and some thoughts on entering into pain and suffering in ministry. I'm going to read verses 5 to 10, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and to kind of set up the context, the Apostle Paul is addressing conflict in the church, and there are people who are questioning Paul's legitimacy as an apostle. They're questioning Paul's credentials because he is weak, because he's a weak man. And listen to how Paul responds to his critics. In verse 5, he says, "On my behalf, I will not boast, except of my weaknesses. Though if I should wish to boast, I would not be a fool, for I would be speaking the truth." Paul's saying, I have some things I could be boastful about, but I'm not going to. "But I refrain from it." He continues, "So that," why is he refraining from boasting in his credentials? Here's why. "So that no one may think more of me than he sees in me or hears from me. So to keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given to me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with my weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong." There's so much here we could discuss and unpack, but the big idea that Paul is wanting to communicate is that weaknesses, his limitations, trials, struggles, suffering, conflict, these brought to Christ are what qualify him for leadership, not what disqualify him. When we recognize the suffering and conflict and pains and trials of our life, when we bring those to Christ, that is what will give us the greatest ability to minister to people. And so with that in mind, I just want to share 6 lessons that a young, foolish pastor, myself, learned through walking through suffering and conflict. And some of these, the first few, are kind of personal how it changes us in the last three, or a little more how we're ministering to others, how we enter into the conflict. First, pain and suffering taught me that I'm a human being with limitations. Paul, when he's confronted with people that are saying you are weak, he owns his weaknesses. And he boasts in Christ. He recognizes that Jesus is Jesus, and he is Paul. One of Zach Eswine has a great book, Sensing Jesus. I think it's now in a new form called The Imperfect Pastor. I highly recommend it to everyone. And in it, he shares one of the things that he invites people in his seminary class to do. He has all the pastors stand up. And a verse that they need to cite is when in the Gospel of John, when John the Baptist says, I am not the Christ. And pastors, everyone has to stand up and say, I am not the Christ. And I want to invite us to do that right now. You can stay seated, but just let's declare that right now. I am not the Christ. I am not the Christ. I am not the Christ. I didn't always believe that. I didn't always live that way. I thought that some of the limitations that define other people didn't define me. And I viewed myself as a high-capacity leader. That's the kind of stuff I told myself. And I read leadership books about high-capacity leadership. And I thought church planting was for high-capacity-driven entrepreneur, we're going to make a difference. You know, these other preacher guys or seminary people or people out here, you know, they talk about Jesus. We're going to really change the city. And what I had to come to grips with was, I am not the Christ. I'm Jay. And first and foremost, before I'm a pastor, I'm a child of God. Wrestling through really experiencing healing, I started meeting with a coach and a counselor. His name's Jim Cofield. He's awesome. And our first meeting together, we were connecting. And he, when you meet with a counselor, hey, what's going on? How you doing? And I shared about, had a recent conversation with my wife, Megan, and she said, I wasn't emotionally present a lot. I'd be home, but I wasn't there. And so I'm sharing that with him. And then we're talking about my day and my week and my hours. And it's just, and he says, Jay, you know, some things have to come off the plate. Yeah, some things have to come off the plate. Your homework is you need to take some things off your plate and enter into your home with more emotional energy. So we talk through it. We connect a month later. Oh, man, how you doing, Jay? I'm great. I'm excited. What's going on? Well, I'm part of this group, and we're going to form a church planting movement in Columbus. I'm going to help lead it. Oh, wow. That's great. Last month, we talked about taking things off your plate. So what's coming off your plate in order for you to do this? Well, you know, how much time is this going to take? Well, maybe 2 hours a week. 2 hours a week to do a movement in Columbus. And here's what he said, and I'll never forget. He said, Jay, I want you to be just as excited about ministry and church planting 25 years from now when you'll actually have more to offer. And so I turned it down, and he was right. I was trying to operate as someone without limitations. And here's the thing. We're not robots. I'm not a robot. I'm not a tool. In God's machine, I'm a person. And pain and suffering taught me that. That recognizing my limitations, there's freedom in that. Our limitations aren't a hindrance. There's freedom in recognizing our limitations. A second thing I need to, and really this flows from the first, but in conflict, I must be humble and gracious. I need grace. And others need grace as well. How does Paul respond to his critics? Does he get defensive? How dare you question me and my credentials? I'm Paul. I've been beaten, okay? Can't question my credentials. He doesn't get defensive. He actually owns his weaknesses. A lot of times when there's conflict, a lot of times when people come and there's something they want to share, whether it's an email or in person, when there is conflict, when things are shared, there's two problematic responses. One is becoming defensive, which is essentially saying, you are the problem, person coming to me. and that's often my natural response. Someone comes with an area where I need to grow in or something we need to address. And it's like, oh, well, if we're on the topic of being honest here, and as pastors, we can do that. We can twist things around. We can quote the Bible and beat people up with it. So one response is being defensive. But then another response is being despairing. And I can also do this when people share criticisms. Oh, man, they're right. I'm horrible. I'm worthless. Why am I doing this? I'm unqualified. I should not be in leadership. And really, that's also prideful. It's a coping mechanism. And sometimes when we respond to people that way, it's even actually a power play because we're trying to get our way to make them. When you're sharing someone with somebody, when you're sharing something with a friend or your spouse, an area to grow, and they say, oh my gosh, I'm horrible. They start weeping. And what do you say? You say, oh no, you're fine. Not a big deal. I shouldn't have brought it up. So these are two problematic responses, being defensive or despairing. What does Paul do? He boasts in Christ. What does boasting in Christ mean? Is that like a sermon that we give? A boasting in Christ means we're applying the power of the gospel, grace, to our life. When Paul is boasting in Christ, he's being honest about his weaknesses, but he's not being defined by his weaknesses. They are opportunities for Christ to live through him. And so in conflict, as we enter into conflict in our churches, doing it in light of the gospel, permeating it all with grace. As spiritual leaders, we can't be reacting to people, even when they bring up things that aren't valid or aren't true, or if they bring up things that are valid and true, but they bring it up in a really attacking way, we can't return their insults with insults. We need to model grace in how we enter into conflict, and conflict will come. A third thing I learned was my weaknesses and suffering and conflict, it showed me that I need mentors and advocates. Really, I need friends. As pastors, we need people around us who love us. We need friends. There's a great book. Are any of you familiar with the book Resilient Ministry? It was research done by Covenant Seminary. Put a lot of money into researching how can pastors thrive in ministry in the long term. And they identified five key areas. How can pastors thrive in life and ministry for the long term? And the five key areas were have really good theology. No, theology wasn't even one of them. It was spiritual formation, self-care, family and marriage was the third. Fourth was emotional and cultural intelligence. And the fifth is leadership and management. A lot of the times when we talk about pastors, we talk a lot about leadership and management, and we miss the soul care, the self-care. And it's a reminder we're people before we're pastors. And one of their big findings was that pastors need allies, not just confidants. A confidant is a friend that you can come to, you can share what's happening, and you can be real with. And they can say, okay, that's nice, and you can talk through something. But an ally is someone that you can meet with, and you can just like vomit it. You can be real. You don't give like the interpretation version. You give the rant. You know those friends where you can say things, and it's not. So, you know, some of it's just processing out loud, and some of it's not accurate, and it's not right, but you're getting what's in here out. And that's the thing. What's in here is always going to come out. What's in our heart? What's in our soul? It needs to be processed in healthy ways. And we need those allies in our life that can come along and say, Jay, yeah, man, be real. Take the Pastor Jay hat off and be the person, Jay. And they're not going to leave us either. And so we need those relationships, those friendships in our life. And we also need people to come along to help. When you enter into conflict and suffering, you need people to walk you through that. How do we respond? How do we care for a grieving family who lost a child? How do we help with a family who had a child that committed suicide? What do you do with a family when the father passes away unexpectedly? I mean, these are the situations that we're entering into as pastors. And we need friends and mentors to care for us and to help us as we care for people. A fourth thing, and this is more now kind of thinking through how to enter into suffering. A fourth thing is that people need, they need us to enter into the mess, not to run from it. Suffering and conflict is going to come. There's no doubt about it. It's going to come. And what they need from us is to enter into the mess, not to run. I like to think that I was someone who wasn't afraid of conflict. I'm a church planter. I'm not afraid of having hard conversations. And yet, it really depended on the kind of conflict. There were some things that I was totally happy to sweep under the rug and hope that it went away. And we can't do that. Examples, when we were experiencing conflict and we met with our team and I gave my resignation. One of our now elders, his name's Tom Venema, he'd been a pastor, church planner in the PCA in California, and we were blessed that he had come. He actually had moved to Columbus to be part of our plant, and he had moved that month. And he enters in, he shows up, and he enters into this whole team conflict where the church could go under. I mean, it was a mess. And we're sitting in that room, and I shared, God's calling me to leave. This is the right thing. And everyone gets quiet. And Tom, he says, Jay, I know what it's like. There were times where Kathy and I wanted to get the U-Haul, pull it up to the house at midnight, load it up, be gone the next day. No one know. We'd just be gone. But you can't run. You can't run. And running won't help you, and it won't help the church. And that's so true. There are times in ministry where we just want to run. We want to escape from the conflict. But that's not what God is calling us to do. And we say the same thing to our people. When there's people in our congregation who are facing a hard circumstance, part of what God is leading us to do as a spiritual leader is to help them to live into that reality. And you can't live into that reality if you pretend it's not there and you run from it. This also means we need to protect our wives in how this happens. My wife is totally the better half of our marriage. She is kind and compassionate, and she really weeps with people. I mean, when people are hurting, Megan is just all in with them. But some of the problem of that is she can be really afraid of letting people down. And how many of you have had leaders in your church, been blessed with leaders in your church that are problem makers, not problem solvers? I'll just put it kindly. And they have a way of sometimes entering into leadership. And there was one particular circumstance where there was a couple, and we love them, and we were friends, but there were just some unhealthy dynamics. And they had to be addressed. And we looked past it, and we looked past it, and we looked past it. But it had to be addressed. And we finally did. And of course, it turned out, when there's unhealth, it often gets projected on you, the pastor and spiritual leader. And it became a big thing, and they left the church. And there were times where we'd enter into these meetings. We'd be driving to their home. And I would say, hey, we need to talk about this. And Megan, no. No, we can't. You know, maybe it's our fault, or maybe it's if we just communicated better. Maybe, and these problems went unaddressed, and it didn't make it better. And so part of leadership is being willing to enter into the conflict, even if it's not going to end well. We're abdicating our role as shepherds when we don't love people by speaking the truth, even to the hard areas. being willing to enter into the conflict. It's not going to get better. And also, I think organizationally, so how do we enter into conflict? Part of it, too, is when we think of leadership development, who we're inviting into the team, we need to have clear assessment and development. We need to clarify and communicate what are the values of the leaders that we're raising up here and put it on paper. If you serve at this church, this is what we expect. And in that way, when people are not exhibiting those behaviors, you can take them and say, hey, you signed this document. And in the document was, we don't relate to people. We're not rude. We don't respond in anger. And here, yeah, that was responding in anger. And so you're able to clarify the expectations on the front end. That was something that we've learned and we've since done now at Scarlet City. A fifth lesson, checking our time here. A fifth lesson is people need to hear how the gospel addresses hardships all the time, all the time. As I mentioned earlier, who are the people that we're ministering to? Think about your church. Who are the people that make up your congregation? Are it people who are just generally, they have it pretty much all together, and it's, work is great, and marriage is fantastic, and the kids do everything that you ask of them. I mean, every once in a while they might cry, but it's all great. No, because we're ministering to people, and there's suffering, and there's pain in this world. We minister in cities and communities where there's pain and suffering. It is part of the context, the world that God has sent us to. And so we need to talk about pain and suffering all the time. In sermons, in our liturgy, is there a time in our gatherings where we lament? Do we lament? Do we give people permission to grieve? And thinking of some of the social the racial unrest in our society, often African Americans feel unheard by their white brothers and sisters in Christ. We're almost delegitimizing some of the pain that they feel by not lamenting with them some of the expressions of systemic racism in our country. Do we have time to grieve with people, to weep with people, to lament with people? Is that a part of our gathering? Or is it all celebration? I mean, celebration is important. Joy is a core attitude that God is calling us to. But it's not joy apart from grieving as well. Are we connecting the gospel to the pain and suffering of people's lives? Eugene Peterson has a great quote on suffering. And by the way, when you start to enter through pain and suffering, there's all kinds of authors. Eugene Peterson, Zach Eswine, Henry Nouwen, people that really speak to the heart. And Peterson does it well. Listen to what he says about talking about suffering. He says, we need to know that suffering is part of what it means to be human and not something alien. That's so true. Suffering is a part of being a person. It's not something alien. We need to know where we are and where God is. We need, he uses this metaphor. He says, we need an eye specialist rather than, say, a painter. A painter tries to convey to us with the aid of his brush and palette a picture of what the world is as he sees it. An ophthalmologist tries to enable us to see the world as it really is. And as pastors and spiritual leaders, that's what we're helping our people to do. This is the world as it really is. This is reality. And part of the world as it really is acknowledging the place of pain and suffering. And when we don't do that, we hurt our people. We hurt our people. When we create a version of living that says, you know, pain and suffering, that's for some other person at some other time, we create a version of relating to God and living that is disconnected from the reality of people's lives. Pain and suffering, we need to talk about it frequently and talk about the hope of the gospel in it. When Paul shares about his weakness, how do you think of him? when Paul talks about the reality of his weaknesses, do you think, oh man, Paul, I really loved him before, but now, I mean, he's a weak guy. I want a strong guy. No, you love him more. Because we relate with people who struggle, because we all struggle. And that's what we need. We need to create cultures in our churches and friendships where we can come just be like, hey, be the real you. I love connecting with church planters and pastors. And a buddy of mine, Rich Johnson, will connect and will say, hey, how many times did you quit this week? I mean, he's like, I quit 4 times. Yeah. Last of which was on Sunday morning when the person driving the trailer called in, and there I was, preparing my sermon, just put that on hold to go pick up the trailer and drive it to the church. I was tearing down chair, you know. I love that brother. And it's not because he has all the answers. It's because we're just brothers walking through life, weak and needing each other in the gospel. When we're honest about our weaknesses, it will give other people permission to be honest about their weaknesses, and it will make you a better leader. Lastly, and I think this kind of brings it all together. Again, these were things a young, foolish pastor learned through pain and suffering. People need my presence, not just my answers. What do people fundamentally need? This is the question. What do they need from us? When I was connecting with my counselor, Jim Cofield, he put it so well. We were talking through a circumstance, a challenging circumstance in our church. And by the way, there's a lot of great things at our church, too. You know, you talk about pain and suffering, and that's what we're talking about. There's a lot of great stories. But one of them, we were walking with a couple through a hard thing, and he said, what do they need? What do they need, Jay? Is it an information problem? Because if it's an information problem, they need an information answer. Well, the reality was in this situation, they knew the right behavior. They knew what they needed to be doing. It wasn't an information problem. It was an experiential problem. There was a wound in their past, dating back to their upbringing and parents and dominant childhood emotions and all of that, that was manifesting itself now. And so how do people really experience healing in a painful world? How does healing happen? It's not by information. It's by having new experiences. When we think about the pains of our life, how do we remember them? Is it like, do you remember it like a computer screen? No, you remember moments. You have memories, experiences, being with that parent who said that hurtful thing, experiencing that abuse, being with that friend who you thought had your back and them turning on you. We remember our pain through experiences in our life. And if there's going to be healing, we need new experiences. And so one of the things that Jim said to me, he said, Jay, in pastoring people and helping them process through wounds, you can't just give them answers. You need to model a new way of living. And part of what we're doing is we're reparenting people. Those of you with kids, do you ever say things that your parents said to you to your children? You know, it's like, hey, what do we say to, Bennett, hey, if you want to be a baseball player, if you want to play soccer, if you want to play sports, you need to eat your carrots. Because basketball players, they eat carrots. I'm pretty convinced LeBron James eats a lot of green beans, salad, carrots. And my parents said the same things to me when I was a kid. Why do we do that? Why do we say the same things that our parents said? Because it was modeled for us. It's like ingrained in us. Because we've experienced that. And that's what people need from us. They need our presence. And when people are hurting, there's often not an answer that's going to solve the problem. When someone's in a really hard situation, you're not going to come in to give them the truth that makes that pain go away, because it's not an information problem. What they need is just you. To be there, to empathize, to enter in, to say, I cannot understand what you're going through right now, but I'm really glad you shared, and I'm here with you, and I'm not going away, and we're in this together. That's what people need when they're hurting. The answers aren't going to make it. The problem's going to go away. What people need is our presence. Because people, just like you and me, are not robots. Human beings created in the image of God, living in a fallen world, and emotions, even the positive expressions, the unhealthy expressions, that's part of our journey in life. And so the joy of entering in with people, being there, listening, crying with them, being present, pointing them to Jesus, boasting in Christ, that is the calling before us. So to kind of close this up, summarize it, and then we can, if you have questions or other thoughts, I know a lot of you probably have so much wisdom in this area. Here's what I want to say. Pain and suffering showed me that in ministry, problems, trials are not a roadblock. They're not some issue that needs to be solved so that we can move forward in our church plant. It is the vision. It is ministry. And all of us are counselors. If you're a pastor, you're a counselor. Even if you have someone who specializes on your staff, all of us are counselors. And God has invited us into the privilege of walking with people through the challenging moments of life. What an honor when people are hurting that we get to be part of their redemptive story of experience healing. So that's all I got. I'd love to hear from some of you guys. We have a few minutes left. We don't need to fill up all of our time, but any thoughts or questions from you guys? Yeah.
Are the questions going to be recorded?
They don't need to be. Yeah, we can get real now.
Leaned in the direction of trying to care for the church, but was kind of a crappy friend, and so that was one of the things I'd share with people that I learned. Now that I'm in round two, I'm remembering why that's so hard to do. And so I guess just how, in your journey, kind of when it involves close interpersonal friendships, but you're also trying to care for a church, it stands for certain things, it's moving in a certain direction. Like, trying to wear both those hats, I'd welcome any additional wisdom you might have there.
Oh man, let's hang and talk. Yeah, it's hard. I think that's the biggest challenge in ministry, it's the relational struggles. And I think everything has its context, you know. I mean, because one, sometimes when there's conflict, we're the ones who need to change. I don't think it's always other people's fault. But then sometimes too, with friendship, where it gets messy is we wear different hats with people. It's like, am I wearing the friend hat now, your boss hat, the pastor hat? And people have expectations for who we are and how we're going to relate to them. So yeah, that was part of our story and our conflict was we were such good friends that it made it really challenging when I was now in a position of leadership and how to navigate through that. It just requires a lot of emotional intelligence and processing too. But yeah, I'd love to connect.
Were there times where you felt like it was kind of one or the other? You could be a good friend but at the expense of the church or in your experience, it wasn't not even.
Yeah, I think there were times where it was one or the other. And recognizing, hey, ultimately, we're entrusted with the task of leading this church. And the right decision for the church might not be the right decision for you. And that's hard. And of course, One of the things an executive pastor and mentor shared with me, this is so good. He said, because he's at a larger church, he's hired and fired a lot of people. He's gone through all this. He said, sometimes, Jay, people will be mad because they don't like your decision, and that's just why they're mad. And so it's not always you did something wrong or you're a horrible person. They might feel that because they didn't get what they wanted. And I can respect that. I can get mad if I don't get what I want. But we can't abdicate leading the church. Yeah. It's hard, though. Yeah.
Especially when the church is going in a direction and then you have like a couple that suffer. You know, it's kind of going, all right, well, this couple is suffering from their loss. But at least from my experience, I mean, I had a daughter that was going to be, well, was going to pass away. And basically, in the beginning, we had a lot of people on board. So when you suffer and you expect one or two things to happen, death or life. But that the prognosis is death. But everybody else kind of moved forward as you're kind of stuck in death. So to be fair to the pastor's perspective, you're kind of going, well, he's got a lot of issues he's dealing with. But from the person that's suffering, it's kind of going, why isn't he? And at least in my experience, it's if that pastor would have came to me and explained what we're talking about now within the context of, okay, I want to suffer with you, but these are my responsibilities. And I think when a pastor opens up like that and meets the person that's suffering where they're at, I think there's that foundation to grow. But it, for me, anyway, just starting off running something, it's like, okay, what's more important? You know, get this going, or spend that time with my wife. You know, what's really going to grow, you know? When I say yes to something, I'm saying no. So that compartmentalizing starts to step in, you know, and it's just kind of going, wait, I've got to squash this. And what's the main problem?
Yeah. One, I'm really sorry. Did your daughter? Great, praise God. Yeah. Well, that's a big part of leadership is having discernment on how to invest your time and manage all of the different expectations that people have. And another part of it too is we're going to let people down sometimes. And even, I think that's a part of even recognizing our limitations. There's things we can do, things we can't. But being willing to be there with people to the extent that we can, I think is absolutely vital. And we can't just fill up our time with sermon preparation and also we can't just fill up our time with investing in the easy, healthy people. There has to be a place as pastors for caring for people who are in a really hard spot. But recognizing our limitations in it and so it's just a lot of discernment. And it can be a challenge. A good thing to have mentors for. How are we spending our time and what do we need to be saying no to?
Can I speak to that?
Yeah, please.
From the elders and how like care is a two-way street. And I mean, I guess most of us know people that are perpetually needy and you always let them down. But just trying to figure out what it looks like to prepare people who are going to be a part of our family. Man, like this is what you're going to get and we're going like on the front end, we will fail you. We promise. It's not our intent. So be the church. Invest and contribute, and receive the church, you know, on community level, community groups, or whatever. I'm just trying to spell out what people should expect from me and from us, you know.
Oh, that's so, yeah, so spot on. And we're going to let so many people down. I mean, when you're in leadership, you just have a big target on your back, and it's just going to happen. Some of the criticism will be valid. Some of it's going to be totally invalid, and you'll want to go out there and like defend yourself. And I forget the exact psalm, but where David says, people returned my kindness with evil. And there will be times where you're trying to help people and they will turn it back around on you. So yeah, being honest, hey, I'm going to fail. I'm weak. Like Paul says, I'm weak. I make mistakes, but we're trying to be faithful. In conflict, that's important too. One of the things when our church experienced conflict, so things were said to people in our congregation, the real story was told. And man, you want to go out front and say, okay, here's the, yeah. But to go forward and to just say, man, one of the things I'm learning in this is I need to grow in humility. And spiritual leadership's hard. I've made mistakes. And we're just going to try to move forward. People, when they hear that, it builds trust. When you're with someone who is really proud, we're all proud. Just some people admit it. When you're with someone who's like, no, man, I got this humility thing down. I don't struggle. What are you thinking? You're thinking, I'm not going to follow you. Because I can follow the person who at least knows they're weak. The person who's delusional and thinks they're going to solve everyone's problems and they have it all together, you don't want to follow them. So people will follow you. They will embrace the Paul who knows their weaknesses. Yeah.
Mentor this teenager, just a very good teenager, very smart and everything. But he got like a job, but it couldn't sustain him. You know, it couldn't sustain him. Single mother, you know, about to get evicted continuously, you know, she's looking towards him to bring in income. And so like, you know, trying to point him in the right direction continuously. Mm-hmm. Stereotypically has been painted as a villain, but it's usually people who have no other options. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you, in my heart broken, I was able to like help sometimes, but I wasn't, you know, able financially to support. So how do you walk with somebody who, I know we're not the same and we can't solve anything, but like, I didn't have an answer for, or not just an answer, I didn't have an alternative for him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, I think, where I personally struggle is how do we deal with those conflicts when we don't really have an alternative to give bad decisions.
Yeah. Sometimes part of it, I think there's a few things. One, so how do we enter into social unrest and help neighbors that are suffering, not just people in our church? I think part of it, too, as churches, we need sustainable community development investment. So seeing even how we do mission, not just doing charity, but actually investing in the real problem, the real tangible issues. So learning our communities and having resources for people, because we can't do it all. You don't have enough money to give to everyone, and time. And so, yeah, having that discernment on how to help people, and give them what they need. And part of that is helping people to take ownership too. even in counseling people, we can't solve their problems for them if people aren't willing to acknowledge the need for change and want to work toward it. There's nothing we can do. We can be there. We can love them, pray. So people like, yeah, the neighbor, I mean, there's not easy answers and everything has a context, but to almost go in to try to fight to get them to want to get a job, you know, pursue a healthy living for himself and his community. But if he doesn't make that decision. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I see. Yeah, trying to resource them, connect them. I mean, a lot of cities, I know in Columbus, there's job resources for people. Really trying to help them get connected. I think people in poverty, that's one of the biggest struggles, is they don't have a network. There's not people there to support them and to help them meet people who are hiring. They just, you know, and so that's a, again, that's part of that like sustainable ministry mindset where we're coming in to empower people and also a big part of that, this is a whole nother thing. I mean, we talk about this, that'd be another great breakout session, but in doing that too, one of the ways we love people is by letting them serve us. When people experience their humanity, and part of being a human is giving back. This isn't just me here to help you. I mean, that's a lot of times what suburban churches do in inner cities. We go in, we'll serve for a day, and it's like, you're welcome. You know, we have our church shirt on, and now we're going to go back. But the thing is, that can rob people of their personhood. And to go in and say, you know what? I need you, maybe more than you need me. And I know. Yeah, sorry, not how much help. Any other question? Yeah.
I know you ran over real fast over that resistant church.
Mm-hmm. Resilient ministry, yeah.
Ministry. And one of the things you mentioned was taking care of yourself and I'm on a depression meds for 5 months now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This last night, there's a girl. She called me and she eloped with this guy in Vegas, literally, and then came back and we're married. No, you're not. And then 3 months into marriage, you know, he's threatening to kill himself and he's beating the dog. And so every other month, every other week, they're calling us. Eventually, I spoke to her on the phone about 20 minutes, and that was it. That's all I can give her. But I don't know, where do you draw the line, you personally, when you simply say, that's it, I can't give you another penny.
It just takes a lot of discernment. And I think when you create a culture where care is happening too among people, whether it's other elders or people in groups ministry, empowering people, so that everyone doesn't always need to go to just the pastor or you. But yeah, sometimes there's relationships and they're harder and we give them what we can, but we, yeah, don't give them everything. Boundaries are huge. Boundaries are very important, and that's a part of self-care and recognizing our limitations. I'm not the Christ. And even leading that with people, hey, I'm here, I'm a pastor, I'm a friend, but I'm not you. And if we're going to experience healing and growth, I need you to take some ownership. And I'm here to help, but I can't do it for you. And then a big thing, too, is transference, not letting people transfer their things onto us. And you know, there's all kinds of things. And that's why I think maybe we can wrap up with this because we're out of time. One of the great things is get connected to really good resources and get training and counseling and read books and marinate on the stuff, because this, we're called to help people. When I was in seminary, I think I took two classes on psychology and counseling. If I could go back, I would have taken a little less Hebrew stuff and a little less theology stuff and more counseling, because that's where people are at. And the last thing, all of this will help your preaching. It will help your leadership, because the big questions people are asking in our congregation is not, how are we going to reach the city? I love that question. You know, I'm at the Acts 29 conference. I get excited. Most people are normal. And they're like, how do I love my husband? How do I love my kids? Those are the questions they're asking. And so when we really tap into this, now even just the things that are talked about and how we communicate it, man, my preaching at first, it was like I was talking to seminary people. And we had a lot of like PhD people at our church that would be like, man, I love the sermon. And my wife would be like, oh man, you lost me on, you know, that quote of philosophy. We need to bring our theology to the ground level. Like that's what is it, right here, embodied, present, living, and ministry. Thank you guys. I love to connect. God bless you.